all paid particularly close attention to the workers' actions. As they loaded the device onto a floating platform, another figure appeared from underneath the ship.
What the hell is that?
Popoff asked. This new figure stood a head shorter than the Nether Guards, its body slightly thinner but encased in armor bulkier than a Strike Marine's. Unlike the Nether Guards, it didn't wear a helmet. Its bald head and face were exposed, though several cables ran from housings on its back armor to metal couplings on the back of its skull. Carson zoomed in further. This wasn't a doughboy. It was a man. The human workers backed away from the new arrival, all bowing their heads, shoulders hunched like cowering animals. After apparently giving a series of commands to the assembled workers, the figure turned and Carson cursed, zooming in on its face.
Holy shit, Birch said under his breath. That's Jared Hale.
That son of a bitch,
Nunez said, bringing up his carbine. Carson held out a hand. Stand down.
But Chief!
I said stand down, Sergeant. Moretti, what the hell happened to him?
Looks like cyber augmentation,
the medic said.
I've seen tech like this used on those with extensive nerve damage, but not to that degree.
He's lost his mind,
Nunez said.
Spent too much time with that triumvirate whatever and went native.
No, there's more to this, Carson said. Wasn't there something about Jared from the war? Something more about him being an engineer?
He was a doughboy platoon leader when the Toth attacked Hawaii, Birch said. And there's a story about Ken Hale from a later battle. He broke the siege on a firebase. There was an officer that was surgically altered to look and sound like Jared. Happened to a lot of the doughboy leaders. Something about Jared Hale made the doughboy's imprint on him, made him more effective in battle.
So instead of figuring out what it was, they just made people look like Jared Hale?
Popoff asked.
The next wave of Zaros were on the way to wipe out Earth, West said. It wasn't the time for elegant solutions.
So that might not be Jared,
Carson asked.
Has to be him, Moretti said. Altering the doughboy leaders was done to procedurals while they were in the tubes. If this triumvirate had Procytech, they wouldn't need the colonists. They just churn out willing servants.
But if all these Netherguard are primed to obey that Hale, Popoff said, what would happen if we kill him?
Doughboys would go berserk if their alpha was killed, Moretti said. Design feature to keep him from going docile and being killed too easily.
He dies and it could be a massacre,
Carson said. Reluctantly, Nunez lowered his carbine. They watched in silence as Jared Hale and an entourage of Nether Guards left the construction chamber, disappearing into a corridor on the far side of the room. The workers finished loading the device and the platform rose into the underbelly of the spacecraft. The remaining Nether Guards escorted the group back through the fence before closing and locking it, standing guard just outside the perimeter.
We should go, Chief, West said. I don't know what more we can learn here. We need to get this information back to the director. He'll want to know about the ship, not to mention what's happened to his brother.
Carson blew out a long, frustrated breath. She didn't like the idea of leaving all these people behind, but knew there was nothing they could do for them now. They couldn't even get a fraction of the people aboard the Valiant, much less the rover, and would risk exposing themselves if they tried.
You're right, she said finally. I don't like it, but you're right. There's little else we can do here.
Something's happening,
Birch said, putting a hand on Carson's shoulder.
Look.
It took a moment for Carson to find what Birch was seeing, a flight of three small drones descending from a platform 20 meters up. Green and orange lights flashed as the drones flew over the workstations. One by one, the colonists stopped working and began to file out, under the close watch of the Nether Guard. They formed orderly lines, exiting through several corridors around the chamber as another group entered.
Shift change?
Moretti said. The new workers moved quickly to their stations and the drones docked in a recharge station, bolted to a tall pole on the catwalk.
Those drones, Carson said, turning to Birch. Could we hack them?
Birch looked at Popoff.
Those look like Moth G's, inventory control drones. Can you do remote access?
You are such a geek.
Popoff swept her hand over a gauntlet.
I'm not picking up anything on known control frequencies. I'm not getting any transmissions at all in here. My guess is they're on infrared and lasers.
We need to open them up for a hick.
Or get between the lasers and piggyback off their signal, Bert said. I send a gremlin into the formation and we can hack in. Civilian tech is a joke to crack.
It's true, Popoff tapped her gauntlet. They've got source code going back to the first Ibarra bots.
We hack in, and we can pull Vid from this entire complex, West said. Would make planning a rescue operation a hell of a lot easier.
New plan, Carson said. Popoff, load up the override codes to the Gremlin. Moretti, you're with Birch and me. West, Nunes, Popoff, hold here. If anything goes wrong, head for Rover and get the hell out of here. Got it?
Without waiting for acknowledgements, Carson turned and motioned for Birch to move out. They made their way around the catwalk, along the perimeter of the chamber. They dodged two teams of patrolling Nether Guards, who were more focused on watching the humans below than anything going on around them. Birch led them onto a gantry, connecting the outer ring with the one in the middle. They moved over a group of the honeycomb workspaces, slowing to look at the colonists working below. Some were operating additive printers, crafting bespoke parts from raw metal dust and polymers. Others were assembling parts, and a select few sat at computer terminals working on some type of code. A ladder just off the inner ring took them up to another smaller ring where the drone station sat. Surprisingly, there were no Nether Guards protecting the station, and Birch went right to work. He almost had one of the side panels open when a loud two-tone chime echoed through the chamber. Carson motioned for Birch to stop as three Nether Guards entered from a far corridor, marching across the open space with purpose. They stopped near a cluster of workspaces, standing in a wedge just outside the entrance. A deep voice boomed and reverberated in the space around them.
Danielle Scartucci!
The colonists working in the cluster stopped what they were working on, all keeping their eyes on the ground. A woman near the back of the cluster shook her head, taking several steps backward.
No!
She shouted, her voice a mixture of desperation and anger.
I did it right!
Daniel Scartucci!
The voice repeated.
You have been found in non-compliance.
No!
The woman screamed, dropping to her knees.
Masters, please!
This is your second offense. Apparently your punishment for your first non-compliance was insufficient.
The woman walked forward on her knees, hands outstretched.
Don't! I follow the schematics! I follow them exactly! It's not my fault every time there's an adjustment in the project. It affects already assembled parts if it malfunctioned. It's not my fault!
Are you suggesting the fault lies with the designers?
The woman paused, looking between the faces of the Nether Guards.
No, no, I'm not saying that at all. But I did deliver the correct piece if I'd been told prior to its construction.
One of the Nether Guards stepped forward, slamming a fist into her gut. The force of the blow lifted her off the ground and dropped her to her knees and elbows. The two other Nether Guards slammed their clubs into the ground in unison as the first one stepped toward the woman again. Moretti brought up his carbine, resting it on the rail in front of him.
To hell with this.
No, stop, Carson said. Our mission is more important than just one person. If we give away our position now, we can't help the rest of them, and the director will never know what's happening out here.
We can't sit back and do nothing.
I don't like this either, but we don't have a choice.
The Nether Guard bent over, grabbing the woman by her throat and lifting her off the ground. She gasped, hands frantically clawing at the Nether Guard's hands, legs kicking, wildly searching for purchase.
They're gonna kill her!
Moretti tensed, his finger on his carbine's trigger.
You will hold your fire, Moretti. Stand down and do not interfere.
Moretti held Carson's gaze for several moments before looking away, cursing. The woman's cries faded, her arms losing strength, legs going still.
Given your skills!
Another voice boomed through the chamber.
I will grant clemency. Unit Garnet 12, her left leg.
The Nether Guard holding the woman released his grasp on the woman. It stomped onto her left ankle and took a club from one of the other doughboys. It rammed the tip down onto her calf and the crack of bone echoed through the chamber. She curled into a ball, sobbing as she clutched her broken shin.
You will be reassigned to another production line at the next shift change,
the new voice announced. It sounded more human than the previous one. Carson had a worrying suspicion she knew who the voice belonged to, and the thought turned her stomach. The voice continued.
Any further failures will result in termination. The rest will resume their previous duties.
The Nether Guards watched as the woman crawled away. One of her co-workers finally approached her, helping her sit in one of the chairs along the wall.
Nunes.
West's voice came through the team's IR, tone tense and alert.
Don't move. You've got a drone directly above you.
Carson shifted position, looking down on the other half of her squad. Her three Pathfinders sat crouched on the walkway below, visible only as outlines in Carson's HUD. A small drone, outlined in red, hovered in the air above their position, rotating, lights blinking, as a dog that's picked up an odd scent might.
Hold,
Carson ordered. In any other situation, she might have simply blown it out of the sky, but here, deep inside an alien prison, surrounded by who knew how many advanced guards, shooting the drone wasn't exactly prudent.
I don't think it sees us,
Popoff said. Carson gritted her teeth.
Just stay still.
The drone rotated again, then slowly began to orbit their position. Another joined it, holding station above the walkway.
I don't like...
West started. Without warning, the second drone expelled a cloud of yellow mist from a spout on its underside, spraying the three Pathfinders below. The mist clung to the Pathfinders' armor, negating the effects of their camo cloaks, revealing them as yellow silhouettes. West swung his carbine up like a bat, connecting with the drone, sending it spinning through the air. The first drone zipped away, red and yellow strobes flashing. On the ground, a pair of patrolling Nether guards stopped and looked up at the disturbance. A second later, the alarm stopped.
Get out of there!
Carson yelled, leveling her carbine at the closest guard she was about to fire when Birch pulled her muzzle up.
They're compromised, he said. Not us.
Nunez fired. The shot took the guard in the face, snapping its head back, sending it sprawling back into one of the exterior honeycomb walls.
Pop off Nunez on me!
West shouted, already moving back along the catwalk the way they'd come. He stopped short as four Nether guards appeared, cutting off their escape route. West charged, firing from the hip. The rounds hit the flank of one of the doughboys, but the construct ran right for them, oblivious to the injury. Five more Nether guards appeared behind the exposed Pathfinders, charging with clubs raised. Carson pulled her weapon away from Birch and lined up a shot, but stopped as Jared's voice boomed throughout the chamber, his words loud enough to vibrate the platform she stood on.
Do not kill them!
On the catwalk, Nunez turned to face the flanking attackers, firing just as the voice spoke. The front Nether guard took the barrage point blank to the chest, jerking back with Iker spraying. The second guard knocked his injured comrade aside without bothering to try and help, sending it twirling over the rail and reached out for Nunez's carbine. Nunez shot the doughboy through the hand. The bullet tore through the attacker's arm, severing it. The guard swung its club around with the other hand and struck Nunez's weapon, shattering it into fragments. A gout of blood spilled from the mangled arm, then slowed to a trickle as it swung the club around again. Nunez ducked, clearing the line of fire for Popoff behind him. She fired off a burst that ripped through the bleeding guard and struck the one behind it. The rounds bit into the next guard's chest and shoulder, barely slowing it down. It swept its club across the ground and knocked Nunez off his feet. Popoff aimed for its head, but the Nether guard arced its club up and struck the weapon from her grasp. The doughboy stomped a foot onto Nunez's back, pinning him to the ground, then slammed a meaty hand around Popoff's throat. He lifted her into the air, her feet kicking. A Nether guard jabbed its club at West's face, scoring a glancing blow against the edge of his helmet. The guard shoved the haft against West's chest and pushed him back. West fell to a knee, dropping his carbine. He looked up just in time to see the tip of the club connect with his face, and West dropped to the walkway, unmoving.
No!
Carson felt a stab of hatred for herself as she held back, watching as her team was captured. It was happening again. Her decisions had led to disaster, to people she cared about getting hurt. She took a step towards them when a hand on her arm pulled her back.
Chief, wait,
Birch said. She looked at him, questioning, and he pointed. On the ground level, 100 guards had appeared, with more streaming in from the various entrances around the chamber. The flanking group had Popoff and Nunez bound with cuffs and tore their helmets off. One guard crushed their gauntlet screens with a squeeze of his hand. Another picked up West's limp body, unceremoniously throwing him over its shoulder.
We need to get off this platform,
Birch said.
And go where?
Baretti asked.
They're going to be looking for more of us now, and if we run off, we could end up in the guards' barracks for all we know.
Carson paused, searching the workspaces below. She stopped when she saw the woman the guards had beaten. She still sat huddled against the wall of her workspace, seeming oblivious to the chaos around her.
Focus, Carson said. You're still the chief. You're still in charge. So long as they're alive, there's hope.
I bet she knows where they'll take our team. Stay close.
Carson scanned the surrounding chamber, marking the locations of the guards. Most had moved away from the work area, all seeming interested in taking the rest of her team into custody, ignoring the rest of the workers in the chamber. It was practically a straight line from the drone control platform to the Danielle woman's work area. Carson jumped from the platform, using her anti-grav boots to slow and control her fall. She landed with a cat's grace just outside the cubicle, barely making a sound. Danielle sat against one wall, clutching a broken leg, groaning in pain. Carson knelt down next to her, removing her camouflage. The woman started to cry out, but Carson cut her off, covering her mouth with a hand.
Shh! Listen, we're here to help, but you need to stay quiet. I'm gonna turn my camo back on, okay? I'm gonna vanish, but I'm still here, understand?
The woman nodded, her eyes wide in fear.
How long to the next shift change? Where would they take you?
Carson asked after the camouflage reactivated, hiding her from sight.
A few hours. We all go back to the cells?
My team. Where would the guards take them? The cells, too?
I'm not sure anyone hurts a guard like you people did, and they're executed right away. Hale might take them to the Masters, and they're inside the ship.
Hold still.
Moretti reached over and pressed a hypo spray to Danielle's neck. There was a hiss, and her eyes went out of focus a moment later.
That's awesome, she said.
I can't work on her now, the medic said, but she can skip out on the pain until I can.
Don't worry, lady. He does good work.
Carson pulled back to a corner with Birch and Moretti. She sat, fuming, running her failures through her mind, and contemplating just how she'd get everyone out of this mess in one piece. West screamed as yet another wave of pain flowed through his body. His voice cracked as the pulses continued. What felt like bolts of searing needles over his skin, through his organs, through his very bones. His vision blurred. He couldn't see anything but a dim green light reflecting off a curved surface in front of him. He thrashed against his restraints. They'd strapped him to a kind of table, arms bound out to either side, legs bound together, a wide leather band wrapped around his waist. After removing his armor, they'd stripped him from the waist up, exposing his skin for several wires driven into his body. The pain subsided once again, and West took in a series of rapid, pained breaths. He growled through gritted teeth, straining in vain to pull a hand free.
"What the hell do you want?"
he shouted. His throat burned, the anger in his voice sounding almost feeble, frail. He tried to kick his legs free, but it was no use. West took several long breaths, forcing himself to think rationally about his situation.
"Screaming and yelling isn't going to do you any good," he told himself. "You're a pathfinder. Find a way."
As if his small prison had heard him, the curved surface in front of him seemed to melt away. He felt the table move underneath him, folding up to hold him vertical just inside the opening of the cell. His vision cleared and the room beyond came into focus. Recessed lighting accentuated curved outer walls, painted stark white, lined with gold trim. The gold lines all converged in the center of the room, where a waist-high plinth jutted from the floor, a control panel resting atop it. A door opened at the far side of the room, and a robot strode in. Its legs bent backwards, arms hung loose to the knees. It moved with a fluid grace akin to an organic being. It was tall and painfully slender. Strips of black and silver segmented metal formed its fluted surface, too ornate to be some sort of menial automaton. Its head was elongated and echoed the Nether Guard's appearance. Two eyes glowed red in a featureless skull. As it walked, a pulsing red light seeped through the creases in the metal. Another figure, human, followed the robot and stepped to the side as he entered. West pulled against his restraints, blood pounding in his ears.
"You son of a bitch!"
he yelled at Jared Hale. The alien gave Jared a sidelong glance, then flicked a finger toward West. West grimaced as another wave of energy pulsed through him. He clamped his teeth together, refusing to cry out. The pain passed. His body slumped back against the table. The robot stopped in front of West, cocking its head to the side as if considering what exactly to make of the senior pathfinder. Without saying a word, it reached forward, a small blade extending from its index finger.
"What do you want?"
West asked, trying to pull away from the knife. The clamps holding him tightened against his skin, holding him still. The knife cut into his cheek, just below his cheekbone,
slicing an inch-long line through his skin. West screamed, jerking his head away. The alien pulled the knife back, then ran another fingertip across the gash, swiping up some of the blood. West growled, then spit a large wad of phlegm and blood onto the alien's face. The reddish spittle hit the robot's face, but there was no reaction.
"You promised those that followed would bring the answer,"
the robot said, his voice mechanical, flat. No mouth moved with the words, but light pulsed where its mouth should have been. The finger with West's blood glowed.
"This one is like all the rest. Not what we need."
Jared stepped forward.
"This is the first, Archduke. The first of many thousands. There's no way all are trueborn."
"You traitor," West muttered. "What have you done to the colony? To all those people?"
"Silence," the Archduke said, his tone more annoyed than anything. "Always promises with you, Jared. You said the answer lay with one you called Shannon, and we lost much searching for her."
"Unforeseen circumstances," Jared said. "Had our one ship not crashed, I would have hunted Shannon down personally."
He stepped up to West, and the Pathfinder got a closer look at him. The bundle of cables at the back of his skull ran into the armor encasing his body, the design clearly not human. Thin wires pulsed beneath Jared's face, like roots from a tree.
"Let us test the others," Jared said. "Perhaps fate does smile on you today, my lord."
West groaned as the energy pulsed through him again. The pain faded, and the Pathfinder watched the robot move toward two large, opaque eggshells embedded into the wall. As he neared them, the fronts melted away, as his had, revealing their human captives inside. Popoff and Nunez, both strapped to similar T-boards as West, both looked as though they'd been through hell. Nunez groaned, lifting his head. Blood trickled down the side of his face from a gash on his forehead. Popoff looked up, her face a mask of confusion and pain. After a second, she seemed to finally comprehend the scene in front of her, and she let out a throat-scratching scream. The Archduke ignored the outburst, walking up to Nunez, forgoing the cut to the cheek in favor of simply running his finger over the open wound. Nunez cursed, jerking away from the probing fingers.
"Not what we need."
"Hey, untie me from this thing and see if you know."
Nunez's jaw clenched shut as pain lanced through his body. The alien moved to Popoff, who screamed as it neared, reaching up to her face.
"No, no, 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 get away!"
she shouted, thrashing her head back and forth. Reaching up with its other hand, the alien took hold of Popoff's chin, forcing her head still as he cut into her cheek with the other. Popoff's screams of fear and pain echoed around the room. The robot withdrew the blade, and her cries were cut short as her body convulsed.
"Stop it!"
West shouted.
"Tell us what you want!"
The Archduke swiped its finger across the cut, then stepped away. It held its hand up and cocked its head to the side.
"Fascinating," it said, eyes falling on Popoff. "Such exquisite craftsmanship. An impressive feat of biological engineering. The Karesh were masters. The key to the procedural bodies is finally here. This sample will be enough to move the project to the next stage."
"What do you mean?"
Hale asked, sounding surprised.
"You found what you need?"
The Archduke continued as if it hadn't heard its human conscript.
"A vivisection may not be necessary for now. Do what you will with the males, but keep her alive. The Emperor and the Prince will want to hear of this. We've been locked in these shells for far too long."
"Prosy?"
Popoff asked.
"No, can't be my... My parents had me!"
The robot turned and left the room without another word, leaving Hale alone with the three Pathfinders.
"What the hell have you done, Jared?"
West demanded. Jared glared at West, his eyes hard. He worked the muscles in his jaw for a moment, as if considering his next course of action, then snapped his fingers. West felt his table drift back into an open eggshell, and shouted curses at the traitor as the front surface formed around him again, sealing him off from the rest of the world. Chapter 12 Hale shifted again, trying to remember if power armor had been this uncomfortable when he'd worn it daily. He felt slightly nostalgic wearing the old getup, despite the fact that this armor had obviously shrunk over the last several years, though standing on the bridge of the Enduring Spirit in Strike Marine armor made him feel out of place. He was the director of this mission, not a team leader again. He thought back to all the days aboard the Breitenfeld during the war, and wished Valdar, that ship's captain, were here to offer guidance.
"And the new battle armor is being issued as we speak," Marie was saying. "However, Second Company won't be fully outfitted with their weapons for another 12 hours. They're scheduled to deploy at 0430 local.
Hale resisted the urge to rub his eyes.
"What's the delay?"
"The foundry screwed up the first batch of rifles, swapped some material element that would make the barrels explode after 100 rounds. At least we cut it up here and not during a firefight. My people were able to locate it and correct it, but we had to toss out an entire batch. Luckily, First Company received theirs before the assembly fouled."
"A lot can happen in 12 hours. We'll need to rework some of the second stage mission parameters."
Marie nodded.
"Hopefully we'll hear back from Carson's team before that."
"Signal from the surface, Colonel,"
Commander Edison said from his station to Hale's right.
"Audio only."
"Put it through here," Hale said. Edison tapped a few controls, then added,
"Nova One, this is Spirit Actual. What's your situation, Captain?"
"Spirit Actual, Nova One. Primary forces have landed in LZ-1A and are deploying to Target One. Estimated to be on target 30 minutes, sir."
Hale checked the chrono at the front of the bridge.
"Confirming. 30 minutes? Why so long?"
"That is correct, sir. We're working what you might call some grit out of the gears, sir. Convincing Rangers, infantry, and a few salty old strike marines to work together is like asking a room full of toddlers to share their ice cream."
"Captain, you may advise your troops that if I have to come down there and put a boot in their asses, I will. And I can promise you they won't like it."
"Roger that, sir."
"Also be advised that Second Company's departure has been pushed back. We'll have a better ETA for you in a few hours. Right now, stay on mission, but plan to secure a new LZ when the time comes."
"We'll be ready, sir."
"Sir?"
Hugh held up a hand.
"I'm picking up massive energy readings from the Christophorus."
Hale pushed himself out of his chair, almost launching himself into the air, forgetting he was wearing his armor. He looked at Hugh's screen. The Christophorus was still near the smaller of Terra Nova's two moons, their orbit over the planet bringing them much closer to the Spirit and the fleet's other ships than when they'd first arrived. Hugh shook her head.
"No, wait, it's not one signature, it's breaking up into several. I'm getting more than a dozen now. Looks like they're coming from the cargo pods left in the frame. I'll have a visual in another minute."
A wireframe holomap appeared on the plot in the center of the bridge. 12 orange dots spread into a rough spherical formation, shooting away from the old colony ship toward Hale's fleet.
"There was nothing in those cargo containers," Edison said. "We scanned them."
"But we didn't look inside,"
Marie grumbled. Hale nodded, weighing his options.
"Lock us down, Commander. Every hatch, every bay. Instruct the rest of the fleet to do the same."
He turned to Marie. "Sound general quarters. You have the bridge." Marie nodded.
"And what are you going to do?"
Hale looked down at his armor and picked up his helmet from the holo table.
"Not my first rodeo," he said.
"If we could make fighters as easily as we make those fancy pants of yours, you'd be stuck here,"
she snapped. Hale and the bridge crew watched in silence as the orange dots shifted to red as they neared the Spirit. Their lack of offensive weapons put them purely on the defense, and even those capabilities were slim to none. How were the designers supposed to know the biggest colony ship ever built would encounter an armed alien presence days after making what should have been a peaceful jump? Course projection lines appeared on the plot, all angling to the aft section of the Spirit.
"That's not right,"
Commander Edison said, stepping up to the plot, frowning.
"Those projections put them near the main cargo bay. Why would they want to attack there? You'd think they want to assault as close to the bridge or engineering as possible."
Marie barked orders into her handheld comm, sending teams of armed crewmen to converge on the main cargo bay. Hale swiped a hand over the holomap. The image zoomed toward the aft section of the ship, putting the cargo bay front and center.
"Wherever they land, I want force fields to reinforce the hatches and passageways. Commander, let's start evacuation, starting with this area here."
"Aye, sir."
"They'll reach us in 3 minutes,
Hugh said. Hale watched the lead ship rotate on its approach, presenting its aft section to the Spirit. As it came within 100 meters, retro engines flared and anchor cables shot from all four corners. At 5 meters, a cluster of cutting lasers ignited, slicing into the Spirit's hull.
Hull breach!
Hugh reported. As the first ship's laser faded, an umbilical extended from the underside, latching onto the Spirit's hull around the fresh, circular breach. The second ship's anchor cables fired, and a second later, it too was cutting into the hull, breaching several feet away from its companion. Marie touched her ear.
Contact! Borders coming through! The altered doughboys again, and they're armed with rifles!
Hale cursed, standing and pulling his Gauss carbine free of its magnetic clips on the side of his chair. He donned his helmet and felt old memories stir in the back of his mind. Marie looked at him, her eyes filled with worry.
Stay safe, my love.
Hale slapped the bolt release on the rifle and a loud clack echoed through the bridge.
Can't. Time to crack some skulls.
Chapter 13. Sergeant Neil Ricks stopped at the back of an abandoned ATV and peered down the empty street. The city around him was eerily silent. It reminded him of the holovids of the first days of the Ember War, when then-Lieutenant Hale had gone into the ruins of Phoenix, the last standing city on the planet. He wondered if this was what the ancient settlers would have felt like when they found Roanoke. The Terra Nova Militia, First Company, had spent the majority of their first day on the surface securing the spaceport just outside the colony limits, repairing fencing and walls around the perimeter. Guard towers had been set up to watch for the altered doughboys, but none had been encountered yet. Aside from the corpses Chief Carson's team had left behind, they'd found no sign of the alien occupation. His squad had spent the morning clearing out one building after another and were nearing the end of the patrol route. The day had started out fairly rough as none of the members to 1st Platoon, 1st Company, Terra Nova Militia had ever worked together. The ratio of former Strike Marines and Terran Navy was almost even, though Ricks would have preferred more Marines. For Ricks, even after being out of the service for 2 years, jumping back into tactical operations was like riding a bike. The same couldn't be said for the sailors, who probably hadn't handled a rifle since basic.
You think we're going to find anything?
Corporal Connor Eaton asked. The former Strike Marine stopped next to Ricks, keeping an eye on the street.
God, I hope not, Rick said, adjusting his hold on his carbine. The weapon had still been wrapped in plastic when they'd issued it to him. They'd all been allotted a few hundred rounds for familiarization before deploying to the surface, but the weapon still felt strange in his hands. Not to mention that compared to anything he'd fired during his time in the Strike Marines, this thing was like handling a pea shooter.
What's wrong, Sergeant?
Eaton asked.
You don't have faith in the shiny new equipment?
Ricks ran a hand over his protective vest.
You mean the armor they just printed as fast as they could without any real thought to the capabilities of the enemy? We might as well be wearing paper hats and togas.
That's better than nothing,
Ricks laughed.
You say that now.
The handheld IR in a pouch on Ricks' vest chirped.
Nova 1 to all units, fall back to command post. Repeat, Nova 1 to all units, fall back to command post.
What the hell?
Eaton said.
Captain Hanley sounds scared as shit.
Night 1 to command, what's going on back there?
A single gunshot echoed in the distance. Ricks ducked, eyes snapping around, trying to decide where the shot had come from.
Who's shooting?
More gunshots sounded. Another soldier came over the comms. His voice panicked.
Command post, Night 3! We have contact! Multiple towies advancing on a position!
Rick's mind raced, trying to visualize where Night 3 had been assigned. They were north of his team, clearing one of the residential blocks.
Night 3, command post, break contact and fall back to the CP!
That's easier said than done, Command! They cut off our retreat and are pushing us west, away from the spaceport!
Corporal Eaton put a hand on Rick's shoulder.
They're only a few blocks away.
Come on.
Ricks led his team through several back alleys to the north as the sound of gunfire intensified. They stopped at the end of an alley and saw the militia platoon pinned down before several parked vehicles on the side of one of the apartment buildings. Rocks zipped through the air and hit the building wall with the force of Gauss rounds, cracking the facade and knocking loose chunks with each strike.
Holy shit,
Eaton said, taking a knee beside the sergeant. Several of the warped doughboys advanced on the platoon from the left, appearing from one of the apartment's entryways. One of the soldiers tripped over a curb and landed hard on his back. One of the aliens launched itself into the air with a spine-tingling screech. It landed next to the fallen soldier, knocking his carbine out of his grip. Long skeletal fingers took hold of the soldier's helmet and pulled it free of his head, then tossed it aside. It seemed to consider the man's face for a moment, then snapped his neck with a twist.
Son of a bitch! Ricks yelled, squeezing his carbine's trigger as the doughboy looked up from the corpse and hissed at him. A barrage of Gauss fire slammed into the alien as more members of his team opened fire, ripping through the creature and sending it into a bloody heap. More doughboys emerged from the dark entryway, all heading toward the militia's location up the street. Ricks brought his rifle up and fired. Two soldiers knelt down beside him, joining his fire. Doughboys dropped immediately, and the wall behind them crumbled as hundreds of rounds slammed into it. The remaining enemy scattered, spreading out across the street or retreating back into the building. Ricks watched as several doughboys ducked behind abandoned vehicles on the far side of the road. They moved extremely fast for their size, at least twice the speed of any human, even in powered armor. A group flipped over a large truck, creating an impromptu fighting position. The characteristic snap of a Gauss bullet zipped past his helmet and smacked into the wall behind him.
They're armed!
Ricks looked at the divot in the wall.
They're armed!
Another group of doughboys appeared at the end of an alley across the street, letting out a bestial cry and charged. One stood up behind a car and fired a Gauss carbine from the hip.
Shoot the smart one!
Ricks slapped Eaton on the back of the shoulder.
I'm shooting the ones coming right for us!
Eaton opened up with his carbine. The first rounds hit. A Gauss round burst out the back of one doughboy and smacked into the one behind. The enemy in the second rank grabbed the one in front before it could fall dead and used the body of its fellow as a bullet shield.
Legs! Hit the legs!
Rick switched his carbine to full auto and gripped the barrel tight. He opened up and swept the weapon to the right, emptying his entire magazine in one pass. Bullets ripped through the doughboys, severing legs at the knee and slapping into their thighs. The forward ranks fell, tripping up the mob. Ricks backpedaled and dropped the empty magazine from his carbine. There was a snap in the air as his carbine bucked out of his hand, spinning through the air in two broken pieces. A Gauss round hit him in the side, and his armor saved him from being ripped open. The bullet still hit like a jackhammer, and he heard ribs crack. He bounced against a car and spun to the ground, groaning. Pain radiated from his flank with each breath. He looked down and was amazed to see his armor damaged but no blood anywhere. He felt Eaton grab him by the carry handle on his upper back and drag him away. There was a crack of a grenade and a wave of overpressure slapped his helmet.
Not so close!
Ricks reached up to grab Eaton by the wrist, but his battle buddy jumped in the street. Ricks rolled onto his back and saw Eaton firing wildly. A shadow passed overhead and Eaton vanished. Big hands slammed against Rick's chest and jerked him up. A doughboy, face mangled by shrapnel and bleeding from cuts, looked at him, red eyes alive with fury.
Shannon.
The doughboy slapped its palm against Rick's visor and yanked at the glass. Ricks thought the beast would pop his head clean from his shoulders when a doughboy carrying a Gauss rifle pushed the other off of him. The armed doughboy poked a cracked fingernail into the emergency release on the side of his helmet and Rick's visor popped off.
Shannon!
Came from the small mob of doughboys around Ricks. He fought back panic as the leader looked his face over. Eaton crashed to the ground next to Ricks, thrown by the doughboys.
Wrong!
The one with the carbine shoved Ricks back down, cracking the back of his helmet against the road. It removed Eaton's visor and snarled.
Wrong! Wrong!
It ripped Ricks' ammo belt off his armor and stomped a foot against his chest, which sent a new wave of pain through his body.
Kill. Eat!
Came from the doughboys.
Kill. Find. Shannon.
The leader stepped away, slapping a fresh magazine into his carbine with practiced ease. Ricks felt a wave of panic as a doughboy reached for his throat. There was a whine of engines and a brrr of rapid fire from a machine gun and blood splashed across Ricks' face. He rolled over and pressed himself to the ground, willing himself into the road as bullets snapped through the air overhead and struck the doughboy with meaty thumps. The fire died away as fast as it began, and Ricks wiped the blood from his face, ignoring the copper tang in his mouth. Doughboys lay around him, some still moving. A team of militia made their way through the bodies, ending doughboys with single shots to the head.
Eaton...
Ricks reached out and shook the other man by the shoulder. His friend looked up, face ghastly pale.
I want to go home,
Eaton said.
That recruiter was bullshit.
You okay?
Captain Handley nudged Ricks in the side with his foot, and Ricks yelped in pain.
Not okay, medic!
Shannon, Eaton said. They wanted someone named Shannon, sir.
I don't know who that is, the captain said. But Dowies and other sectors have tried to capture female militia. Sure wouldn't want to be her, whoever she is.
Rix rolled onto his back and saw mules drift overhead, double-barreled turrets on their bottoms letting off short controlled bursts into other parts of the city.
We've got the upper hand now, Handley said to Rix. They've got the numbers, but we've got the firepower. City'll be ours in a couple hours. Have the docs patch you up, get a new weapon, and get your ass back in this fight, understood?
Just... safe... Goddamn... I forgot how much broken ribs are... Save some for me,
Rix said as Eaton helped him to his feet. Chapter 14 Chaos had erupted inside the bowels of the Enduring Spirit. Hale navigated several corridors, moving against the flow of frightened children and confused parents. Panicked shouts echoed around him, his people, confused, angry, and scared.
Another one just landed, Ken,
Marie's voice told him through his IR.
That's four enemy ships and counting, all cutting through at Cargo Bay 1.
Shots rang out around a corner ahead. Seconds later, crew and families flooded around the bend, panicked, pushing and shoving to get ahead. Hale waved a hand, using his helmet's amplified voice emitter.
Come on, go forward! Head for the crew quarters near the bridge! That's the safest place you can be right now!
A barrage of shots seemed to punctuate his words, and the throng of people pressed past him. Hale keyed his IR as he moved around the corner.
Marie, we've got a lot of frightened people heading to the forward decks.
I'll get a few squads to ride herd.
Mrs. Hammond,
a voice reported on the open battle channel.
We're under fire from Corridor C.
Five boarders moving through Corridor D,
another said.
This is Hale. Hold your sectors as best you can. Reinforcements are coming. Use any means necessary to force these bastards off our ship.
Halfway down the corridor, four militia soldiers huddled behind a makeshift fighting position, chairs and metal cabinets ripped from the bulkhead. Their armor was so new there hadn't been time to paint the dull gray ceramic plates, much less stencil the names of the wearers on their back and breastplates. He crouched down beside one, putting a hand on the fighter's shoulder.
Where's Captain Lewis?
More shots echoed ahead, followed by an inhuman, mechanical wail. The four soldiers flinched, cowering behind the pile of furniture. The man motioned with his rifle.
Up there, sir, we were about to go help, but we thought protecting the civilians was important. Really, sir, we were.
It's okay, Hale told him. They're safe now. We need to go help the others. What are your names?
I'm Henderson, sir,
the first one said.
Stefano, sir,
the second jabbed a finger at the third.
That's my brother. You can call him Jorge if you'd prefer, sir. You know, just to tell us apart.
Two? Okay, I'll do that. And you?
The fourth looked away, almost as if he was embarrassed.
Soldier?
Hale repeated, stepping closer to him. Hale reached up and tapped the visor release. He bit back a curse as the reflective visor retracted. His son gave Hale a sheepish look.
Jerry! What the hell are you doing down here?
His son shrugged.
Command put out a call for militia and I...
You're only 16!
So what? You were the one who taught me to fight for what I believed in. You put a gun in my hand and taught me to shoot when I was 5 years old.
I didn't bring you out here to die. Get your ass to the shelter. I'll deal with you later.
Jerry pulled away.
No, Dad. I mean, sir, I'm part of this mission. I'm part of this ship. I'm not going to stand back and hide in a closet somewhere while others are fighting.
This isn't a game, Jerry,
Hale said.
You don't think I know that? I'm not a kid anymore, Dad. I'm not scared.
Hale stared into his son's eyes, surprised to see determination and resolve. But there was a hint of fear there as well.
You are scared, son. I can see it.
Jerry opened his mouth to argue, but Hale raised a hand, stopping him.
That's not bad. Fear is a good thing, especially in battle.
A rapid staccato of gunfire reverberated up the corridor, followed by men and women shouting orders. The IR buzzed, warnings of alien reinforcements pushing into the cargo bay from additional teams cutting through the hull. Jerry looked toward the sound of the gunfire, then turned back to his father.
Dad! People are dying!
Hale clenched his jaw, considering his son's words. Finally, he said,
Your mother's gonna kill me.
A wary smile crept across Jerry's face. Hale lifted a finger.
Don't think she won't come after you when she's done with me. Keep your head down and follow me. Don't try to be a hero.
Hale led the soldiers down the corridor, around another corner to another hastily makeshift barricade. A team of defenders were exchanging gunfire with a group of enemy boarders at the far end of the corridor. Hale and his reinforcements came up behind the soldiers, crouching low. Hale moved up behind the soldier with Lewis emblazoned on the back of his helmet and slapped him on the shoulder.
What's your status, soldier?
Lewis fired off a burst from his rifle, then ducked down behind the barricade. He flipped his visor up, taking harried breaths between his words.
Overran us, sir. Ugly sons of bitches. Took the bay almost immediately. There, the local system shut off within seconds. They started ripping through the computer terminals almost before they engaged us.
They're searching for the plans for the Crucible, Hale said. They get into those files and they'll figure out everything they need.
Got reports they're cutting through the deck near Sector 7. They could have pushed us back even further, sir, but soon as they got the computer banks under control, they stopped dead cold. They've been taking pot shots at us ever since.
Hale pictured the Spirit's layout in his mind, grinding his teeth.
They're going for the Omnium and the secure storage bay, just forward of this one.
Bullets sliced through a piece of the barricade, sending metal splinters spraying over the defenders. One round caught a Stefano brother in the shoulder, spinning him into the bulkhead. Jerry let off a yelp and moved himself away from the carnage and wiped away blood splattered on his visor. Jorge screamed as his brother crashed to the deck, dropping his rifle and moving to help the bleeding man.
Oh God, no! Silas, no! Medic!
Hale knelt down, helping Jorge remove his brother's chest armor. The bullet had pierced the armor, cutting through Silas's outer shoulder.
The bullet went clean through.
Hale pulled a pouch off of Silas's belt and tore out a wad of spongy foam. He slapped it against the wound and held it there as blood seeped through his fingers.
The clot patch will stop the bleeding. Get your brother to medical. Then you find another group of soldiers to fight beside. You get me?
Stefano nodded quickly and helped his brother down the corridor. Hale shook blood off his hand and looked at Jerry. His son was breathing fast inside his helmet, almost on the verge of hyperventilating. Hale motioned down the hallway, but Jerry shook his head. Bullets snapped overhead and thumped into the bulkhead.
Lewis!
Hale shouted over the cacophony.
I need you to hold this position! We're gonna go secure the Omnium containers!
Hale pointed to his son and Henderson.
Roger that, sir,
Lewis said. But I'm not sure how long we'll be able to hold.
You'll hold as long as you have to!
Hale told him. He waved this team, such as it was, back down the way they'd come.
Let's go!
They reached one of the many vertical service shafts connecting the upper and lower decks of the ship and pulled open the hatch. Hale opened a channel to his wife.
Marie, you need to shut down the core!
The core? Ken, what are you talking about? What's going on?
They're here for the Crucible Gate technology, Marie. They've cut off the main bay from the rest of the ship and are slicing through the deck to the vaults.
Hale ducked through the hatch. He grabbed the ladder, pressed his boots against the outside rails, and began to slide down the tube. Jerry followed right behind, Henderson bringing up the rear.
I'm taking a team to flank them, Hale told Marie as he landed.
Jerry came off the ladder a second later, stepping around his father, clearing the way for Henderson to come down. He put his hand on the hatch and turned to his father.
You know this is going to put us behind their lines.
That's the idea. Who was that?
Marie asked.
Is that Jerry?
Hale grimaced, giving his son a worried look.
Jerry Francois Hale, I swear to God, you get the hell out of there! You're too young to...
Ken!
I can't believe you've got our son with you!
Mom!
Jerry interrupted.
It wasn't Dad! He didn't have anything to do with it! I got the armor and stuff on my own! I can do this, I can fight! You will do no such thing, young man!
Marie, we don't have time for this, Hale said. Send a team to secure the data cores. Pull them out, get them off the ship, whatever you have to do. We can't lose that tech. If we can't hold Terra Nova, then the Crucible is our only way back to Earth.
Hale terminated the link, then pushed open the hatch, revealing a long maintenance corridor.
This'll take us to another access shaft that'll bring us up behind their lines. If we can flank them, hopefully we can knock them off balance enough to overtake them.
They were too tall in their powered armor and had to bend over as they made their way to the far end. Hale took the lead, the weight of the carbine in his hand and adrenaline singing through his veins making him feel like a much younger man.
You don't think they'll be ready for something like that?
Jerry asked. Hale paused outside another hatch, armored gauntlet on the handle.
If these alien doughboys are anything like the ones I fought with during the Ember War, I'd bet not. They weren't known for improvising on the battlefield.
Hale opened the hatch and locked his carbine onto his back, then started climbing the ladder. When he was about halfway up, the hatch above him opened and a nether guard looked down at him.
Oh, shit,
Hale muttered, reaching for his carbine. The alien jumped into the shaft, grabbing the ladder and slid toward Hale. Forgetting the rifle, Hale swung around the ladder, reaching the other side as the alien dropped into the space he'd just occupied. It roared, reaching around the ladder for him. Hale punched through the ladder rungs, connecting with the alien's pelvis. The powerful blow knocked the alien free and sent it crashing into the shaft's wall. It screamed as it fell, landing at the base of the ladder with a crunch. A second doughboy appeared and dropped out of the hatch, not even bothering to grab hold of the ladder. Hale cursed, but didn't have enough time to dodge the attack. The doughboy crashed into him, knocking him back, his hands losing their grip on the ladder. He felt weightless for a moment. Then a jarring pain shot through his leg as his foot caught on something, jerking him to a stop. The alien continued to the deck, landing on its back next to its companion. Henderson shouted, firing off several rounds into the upper hatch. Hale pulled himself upright as a third alien tried to enter the shaft. A barrage of gunshots echoed up the shaft, and the alien jerked as several bullets slammed home. It landed on the deck, its top half hanging out into the open shaft. Blood dripped down and spattered against Hale's helmet.
"Cover me!"
Hale shouted, scrambling upward. As he neared the hatch, he removed a grenade from a pouch on his chest and pulled the safety pin. He let the arming level fly, then counted to three, letting some time cook off before heaving it through the opening. The explosion sent a wave of dust and debris into the shaft, overpressure from the blast knocking the body through the hatch. Hale cursed, swinging to the side to avoid the falling corpse.
"Let's go!"
Hale called down to his men, pulling his carbine and climbing through the hatch. He rolled onto the deck, coming up to a knee, weapon up and looking for targets. Three Netherguard lay dead on the floor. One was missing its entire lower half, while another was missing only an arm. The third was a small pile of flesh and armor in the center of the blast marks where the grenade had detonated. A fourth was crawling away from the devastation, trailing green blood from a severed leg. Hale took aim and fired, the round slamming into the back of the alien's skull, dropping it to the deck. Jerry and Henderson appeared a second later, joining Hale next to a stack of cargo crates. Across the bay, another group of aliens were hunkered down behind a barricade, exchanging fire with the ship's militia on the other side of some partially open doors, either unaware or unconcerned that their comrades had been killed. Henderson raised his Gauss carbine to fire, but Hale put a hand on the barrel, shaking his head. "No, wait. They're focused on the militia. We need to get to the Omnium." He nodded to the jagged hole bored out of the bay's wall. "I'll take point. Jerry, you follow. Henderson, you cover us. Hold this position. If it looks like the militia's getting overrun, you can engage. Otherwise, keep out of sight. Jerry, you ready?" Jerry didn't answer. He was staring at the mess of alien corpses littering the deck around them. Hale put a hand on his son's shoulder. "Jerry." Turning away from the bodies, Hale could see his son's face had gone slightly green.
"You okay?"
Jerry swallowed hard, then nodded.
"Yeah, I'm okay."
"Good," Hale said, "'cause we're not done yet."
Hale glanced back at the group of doughboys across the bay, making sure their attention was still focused on the militia, then dashed for the breach. When he reached the hole, he checked again, then waved his son forward. The secure bay beyond was a maze of large cargo containers, all taller than either man, even in powered armor. Hale led the way through the maze, carbine up, ready to mow down anything in his path. As they neared the center of the bay, Hale took another corner, coming face to face with three alien doughboys. Without thinking, he lashed out with a gauntleted fist, connecting hard with the alien's torso, knocking it off its feet. The other two reacted slowly to his attack. He twisted sideways as one made a grab for him, twitching its wrist as he moved. A 10-inch blade snapped from its housing on Hale's forearm as he threw an uppercut, driving the blade deep into the alien's chin. The third alien leveled a rifle at Hale and fired. The bullet whacked against Hale's torso and bounced off the armor, but the hit knocked Hale back. Hale went to a knee, his knife arm to one side, the blade still stuck in the doughboy's skull. He groaned and dropped to a knee, feeling like he'd been hit by a truck. His diaphragm spasmed, refusing to help him breathe. Before he could get to his feet, the Nether Guard lunged for him, hands reaching for his throat. Hale knocked the hands away, then jabbed his elbow into the doughboy's sternum. The muscles built into his armor turned the hit into a piston strike, and the Nether Guard jerked forward. Hale grabbed it by the shoulder and slammed his helmet into the monster's ugly face. It grunted as green blood smeared across Hale's visor. He caught a glimpse of Jerry stepping up behind the alien, his rifle raised like a club. Jerry brought the rifle down hard, striking the alien just below the shoulders. It snarled and swung an arm back, knocking Jerry to the ground. Hale finally got his blade free from the Nether Guard's skull and planted the soles of his boots against the container behind him, then activated his anti-grav thrusters. He launched himself forward and speared the doughboy. They crashed into another container and Hale's knife pinned his foe against the metal siding. The alien twitched and then hung still, blood pouring from its face down Hale's arm. He pulled the blade free and the alien corpse fell to the deck. Jerry appeared next to him.
"Holy shit!"
Language,
Hale said, retracting his blade.
You know your weapon shoots bullets, right?
He looked down at the dent in his own armor and felt the beginning of a very ugly welt beneath the impact site. Jerry looked down at his feet.
Shoot to kill, son. This isn't a schoolyard fight.
They continued on, stopping where two rows of containers ended, the walkway opening to a large open bay. A team of doughboys unloaded crates of omnium from one of the containers, stacking them next to a 7-foot hole cut from the spirit's outer hull. A small tube connected the spirit to one of the alien craft attached to his ship's hull. Several more Netherguard carried the crates from the stacks outside the breach to their ship. An alien wearing ornate white armor, strikingly different from the dark matte armor of the other doughboys they'd encountered so far, watched over the operation. A small cluster of antennas extended out from the top of its ivory-colored skull.
That must be their commander,
Hale said.
What's that?
Jerry asked, pointing to a waist-high device sitting on the deck next to the alien commander. Several wires and cables ran out from it to the wall of the bay, where metal couplings had been jammed into the bulkhead.
They cut into the hard lines, Hale said. That's why we don't have any control over the ship in here. We take that out and our job gets a lot easier.
He pulled a grenade from his pouch and removed the pin.
Listen, I'll...
Loud shouting from the maze of containers behind them pulled Hale's attention away from the breach point. Gunshots broke out, and Hale felt a round slam into his back, spinning him around and out into the open bay. Another round connected with his chest, the impact knocking him to the ground. He hit hard, losing his grip on the grenade. It rolled across the deck, stopping mere feet away from his head.
Dad!
Jerry leapt to his feet, charging forward.
Jerry, no!
Jerry jumped over his father and kicked the grenade, sending it flying through the air toward the hole in the hull. The commander turned as the grenade sailed past him, bouncing on the deck toward the far wall. The workers stopped as their commander shouted a warning, just as the grenade exploded. The commander's body was torn apart, and several of the workers went flying. Shrapnel from the grenade ripped through the boarding tunnel, and the spirit's atmosphere rushed through the gaps. Hale watched as the tube disintegrated. The cargo bay transformed into a maelstrom. Air howled as it rushed past Hale, taking bodies and debris from the explosion into the void. Hale twisted on his back just in time to see Jerry's feet get pulled out from under him. He crashed to the deck and scrambled to find a handhold as he was blown toward open space. Hale pushed off the deck, flashing his boots to give him a boost of speed. He caught Jerry as the torrent of air lifted him off the deck.
Hang on!
Hale twisted, brought his boots down, and activated the magnetic clamps. The boots pulled both men to the deck where they slid several feet, before the clamps finally stopped them mere feet from the breach. An emergency force field flared to life, filling the gaping hole in the bulkhead. The void's pull on them vanished, and an eerie silence fell over the bay. Hale sat up and looked through the breach. The assault craft tumbled away, trailing the boarding tube like a streamer. Despite the alien bodies and wrecked ship twisting and spinning away from the spirit, it appeared strangely calm out there. After watching the devastation for another moment, Hale turned to his son.
I thought I taught you how to use these things.
He kicked one of Jerry's boots. Jerry flipped his visor up, taking quick, short breaths.
You did. It was never like this at Scouts.
Training never is.
Hale got to his feet. The Netherguard device used to override the ship's controls was a smoking mess, but still connected to the spirit's bulkhead and functioning. Two of the cables were severed, bleeding sparks. Jerry put his hands on his hips.
We should get a tech or a xenolinguist to...
Hale ripped the rest of the cables free, ignoring the spikes of pain as electricity arced up and down his arms. Lights on the device flickered for a moment, then faded altogether. Hale's IR buzzed.
Ken,
Marie said.
Ken, I don't know what happened, but their intrusion into the cores just went down, and we're getting several reports of an explosion in Bay 2. Are you okay? Where's Jerry?
We're fine. Finish securing the ship's core. They're not wearing void suits. If you have system access again, vent every deck those bastards are on.
I can't,
Marie said.
Whatever they use to override our control systems locked out the emergency airlocks. We start venting, and we'll start running out of air pretty quick.
How many are left?
I'm getting reports of fighting in the manufacturing decks, but a lot of groups have already been pushed back.
Okay, Hale said. I'm on my way.
Chapter 15. When the chimes sounded, signaling shift change, Carson and her two pathfinders followed the Danielle woman out of the work area. She grimaced at every step,
even with two of her co-workers helping her along. She looked back over her shoulder several times during the journey through the mountain, as if to reassure herself that Carson was still there, despite not being able to see the team. The human prisoners kept to themselves, only rarely speaking to